Welcome to the Inclusion First podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the First Inclusion Project podcast, College Takeover, All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversations with some amazing college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're going to be talking about what being a Black educator is going to look like with my incredible guest, Lauren.
Hey guys, it's Lauren. I'm really excited to be here.
Thank you so much for partaking in this conversation. So we're just going to dive right into things. As a future Black teacher, how do you see yourself creating a safe and inclusive place for your students?
So there's a lot of things, you know, that I think go into creating an inclusive space in a school. It's not so simple as just being like, no racism, no homophobia, no bullying. One thing that my ed theory classes have had us talk a lot about is structures. So classroom structures, curriculum, classroom management, child psychology, things like that. So kind of breaking down each of those points, for me, in terms of curriculum, I really want to highlight people and voices of marginalized groups. So reading books by POC and LGBTQ plus authors, as well as having main characters and stories that highlight those triumphs and struggles in social settings. So history, social studies, things like that. Talking about different parts of the world, kind of getting away from that American-centric view. And especially when talking about a history lens, looking at it through a very intersectional lens and looking at how, you know, the LGBT plus movement has kind of aligned with the women's rights movement, has aligned with the Black movement, has aligned with the Latina movement and all these different kinds of things. Science, again, kind of the same thing. We don't talk about POC inventors. We don't talk about POC explorers. So kind of getting to the root of those, and then also talking about how environmental science, right? Talking about how food deserts exist in America, talking about how Black communities and brown communities are more affected by air pollution in cities and things like that. And that's kind of the curriculum aspect, if you have any questions on that before I keep going.
I love that. You know, I would really love for you, because this is something that I've never really heard, because when I think of, you know, teachers, I just think of, oh, you know, lesson plans, decorating the classrooms. Can you elaborate more on class structure and what that would look like?
Right. So, at least for me, I think my focus as of right now is elementary. So that's going to have a very different class structure than what you guys are probably used to being a middle school, high school student. It's going to be much more involved with every subject being taught by myself or a co-teacher in one room. So that kind of means that instead of just being able to hyper-focus into having my room covered in all these like math decorations and talking about this is how we can put math into our everyday life, I have to look at it as it relates to every other subject. And how that can kind of affect what I want to do with inclusivity means that I want to make sure every student sees themselves represented throughout the entire room. So I want to focus on creating themes. If we're talking about, you know, power and privilege, I want to be able to, one, make my room feel safe where I can tell them, hey, bullying is a power and privilege dynamic, so let's weave that into our works. Let's talk about the civil rights movement and how that was an example of bullying. Let's talk about how, you know, humans creating carbon emissions is an example of bullying the environment, and kind of taking these big themes, shrinking it down for them in ways that they can understand, and then hopefully making it them feel like, oh, well, you know, Miss Lauren tells us this is bad, this is good, so I feel safe going to her about these all these other things.
That is so immaculate. Where were you when I was a child in elementary school as a teacher? You're everything that I have hoped for, because one of the things that you said was so important about representation, and that matters, because growing up as a dark-skinned Black girl, it literally was not until high school that I was even exposed to diverse works of even just, for example, literature. And I think the only reason too, I don't know, because I can't speak, you know, outside of my experience, but I did go to an all-girls high school. So I was exposed to literature that was written by women. And a few of my teachers made it a point to make sure that we knew about authors, women authors of color, or even just the stories we read were about young girls and women of all different backgrounds. And I remember one teacher, my favorite English teacher, and she said that she didn't care who was in the room, whether the people that were in the room looked different or the same, that we were going to learn about other people and other cultures, because it just makes the difference in who we are and being able to be exposed to that. Because if you don't get it inside the classroom, your only interaction with those cultures might be from those books that you're reading. So I really, really love that. But you did mention that you will be focusing specifically on elementary education. And there has been a lot of discourse over the past couple of years revolving around when kids should learn about race and whether or not race should even be discussed in schools. So should issues around race be talked about in schools? And do you think that kids are too young for these conversations?
So I'm going to answer those in kind of reverse order. Are they too young? No, because again, I can't speak for other countries, but at least in America, we are born into a racialized country. We are born into a place where the first thing that someone notices about you is your skin color. Hopefully, that doesn't mean anything to that person, but unfortunately for a lot of people, it does. So if you have these little kids being born into the society, why shouldn't they start learning that that's just sometimes the way it is from as young as they are, you know? I mean, me and you, we got treated the different way in kindergarten than our little white friends, than our little Asian friends.
Right.
Again, we'd like to think that at a child level, no one's caring that much because they are children, but in this world, who knows? So of course that they're old enough to have these conversations because they're old enough to notice it.
Right.
In terms of should it be talked around in school, of course, and it doesn't matter. Say yes, for me, I do want to focus on elementary, but even in a high school level, every single subject you learn about has, again, at least in America, been racialized in some way, shape, or form. And so you kind of have to look at it and be like, well, is what I'm being told what I'm being told? Or is it the truth about the world we live in? And it doesn't have to be negative. I think there's a lot of perceptions that talking about race is this really heavy thing. And all you do is talk about racism and oppression and how it tears down institutions and how institutions want to divide people by color. But you can talk about all these beautiful other cultures. You can talk about famous leaders who'd made positive impacts on the world. You can celebrate different holidays in the classroom, you know? Like, it doesn't have to be a negative thing. And so why wouldn't you want to showcase the best that humanity has to offer?
That is such a beautiful statement. So, you know, because there are a lot of parents out there, there's a lot of teachers out there, and there's a lot of students out there that are struggling with having these discussions. How do you recommend going about having discussions with young children about race, specifically racism? Because I think, you know, what you said earlier, kids know. We may not know what exactly we know at the time, but we know when something, you know, is just not right. So what advice do you have for, you know, teachers and parents who are just like, how do I even explain this to my child? How do I have these conversations with my kids?
Yeah, well, I think obviously every family and every situation is different, but one thing that my parents did with me growing up that I was so on it, like, so thankful for is now looking back on it, is they never tried to shrink away from anything. You know, they had the news on 24/7.
Yeah.
They had these conversations. I mean, I remember I was in kindergarten or first grade when the Trayvon Martin incident occurred, and they didn't shy away from the fact. They were like, look, this happens and it sucks, but this is the world you're living in and you have to recognize that. Obviously, you know, that kind of brutal honesty is not going to work for everyone, and I totally respect that. In which case, I would, you know, recommend kind of, I don't know if immersion is necessarily the right word, but just trying to showcase, you know, you're a little brown boy. Here's what little brown boys and older brown boys go through in this society. Here's, again, like, here's the bad, here's the good. And when talking about racism, I think real life examples are very important, but particularly talking about microaggressions, if you're trying to not soften the blow, but work your way up to it if you're talking with littler kids. Because, I mean, I was 3, 4, 5, 6, people, oh, I want to touch your hair this, your hair that. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, telling, like, a 5-year-old little girl, hey, I know people really want to touch your hair, but it's okay for you to say no, but you don't have to be ashamed of it if they say something negative about it. And just move on. When she gets older, she'll realize all of the historical context of that. But at least it's a good introduction.
Because for me, I want to say that growing up, I felt like the world that was presented to me was racism died, you know, when segregation died. And it wasn't until third grade, because prior to third grade, I went to a public school that was extremely diverse. I mean, we had a multicultural fair every single year. So to me, I thought that's what the world was like. Once I moved over to private education, I was playing Connect Four and one of the chips was black, and I picked it, and this girl said to me, oh, did you pick that because you're black? And I almost had a heart attack because I was like, oh my God, I'm black. Like, wait, what's going on here? And so I felt like, you know, the world came crashing down on me. I felt like I had an identity crisis at that moment because I said, wait, so people still don't like us because we're black? And I mean, that's not where she was coming from with that, but it's what made me realize that the world is not the world that that I know it to be, which is why I was asking, you know, about how race should be discussed, just because I know that there are other kids who are or were in my position thinking that, oh, because, you know, we had MLK, Rosa Parks, you know, we get the very sugar-coated version of the civil rights movement. And at that time as well, that was when Obama became president. And I was like, I don't want a black man being president, because it was just overwhelming, you know, with the media and the hate. And I feel like my realization it was just too much for me at the time. So
if I can piggyback on that a little bit,
right?
I think you're kind of talking about that. That sense of identity, that sense of realization, that's an unforgettable moment, I think, for anyone, really, when they understand, like, oh, this is the way the world's always going to treat me, and there's not, unfortunately, too much I can do to change that. Yep. And I think that that goes a lot into an aspect of self-care and then community and social care. Yep. Because it shouldn't have, it's inevitable that that's going to be a realization that occurs. But it shouldn't make you sad. It shouldn't make you depressed. It's okay to make you upset, but it should never throw you off your block so much that you're just, like, shook. And I think, especially when dealing with children, you have to help them realize that, but it's still okay to be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being black is beautiful. Being Asian is beautiful. Being brown is beautiful. Being whatever you are is beautiful. And just because this person may not see that doesn't mean that I, as your parent, sister, grandma, auntie, uncle, best friend, doesn't see that.
And that's why I think, you know, the main thing is that make it, tell the truth in a way that is digestible for whatever age. Because to be honest, when I look back at it, I wish that, you know, despite hearing all of the great strides of the civil rights movement, I wish I would have heard that today some people still carry these sentiments, because that shock factor was something that was not, it was not, it wasn't fun at all. And I think that you can't really shield people from things. And I think we try so hard when it comes to kids, because they're innocent and, you know, they're so cute and they haven't met the world. But the problem is, again, depending on where you grow up and where you are, you might be met with things earlier than another kid. So skin color may not be an issue for the 4-year-old going to preschool one place, but it could be in another place.
And I think you're bringing up a really interesting point about curriculum, especially you're saying like history and the Civil War was what you were taught kind of sugarcoated. Because I think that's the case for so many people, is unfortunately a lot of legislators try, and we're seeing it a lot more now, they try to, history is shaped by the victors. So it's the victors trying to say, this wasn't this, let's hush hush about that. And it's doing a disservice, because not only are people mislearning basic information, but to your very point, it's harming their sense of self.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward for you to become a teacher, because the world needs more of you. I cannot express that enough. One of the things that has always bothered me is the N-word and literature. Should students be allowed or forced, and I'm saying forced specifically, to say the N-word in class when reading academic material on the grounds of it being used for educational purposes?
Okay, so I have a lot to say about this one. This one, I like took my little notes down, had a lot to say. First of all, forced, no, not by any single person. If I ever heard that a student was being forced to say a slur, I don't care who it is, I don't care the race of the child, if they were being forced to say something they did not want to say, I don't, who am I yelling at? Because that's just, no. In terms of the choice, I have a lot of layers to this one. In a read-aloud setting, because that's what I was assuming you were talking about, is yes, where the book is being read aloud. Elementary school, no. Absolutely not. 100% no. In middle school, if there is a lengthy, deep conversation about it, and the educator reads it, and the educator is a Black person, and it is a book, that it's not just a slur being used for slur's sake. If it's, say, a book written by a Black person, and they're describing their struggles being treated as a Black person, and they're saying, this word affected me negatively because I'm a Black person, and the educator is also a Black person, and this discussion has occurred before the word is said, I think that that opens up the grounds for a lot of interesting conversation within the classroom. So in that situation, I think, had all those factors being met, I don't necessarily know if I like it, but I do think that that is an appropriate situation because, again, there was all that conversation and understanding beforehand. In high school, again, the same kind of conversational parameters, I think, need to be met, as well as an understanding of how do we tackle this word? This word may trigger you. Here's what this word means in a modern context, etc. Again, I do not think that a non-Black student of color should say it, but if it is a group read-aloud like a popcorn method, and it is a Black student of Black student, and all of those discussions had happened, I think it is up to the student's discretion. And then again, up to the educator's discretion if the educator is Black.
Absolutely. I love that response, just because I think that is something that students and teachers grapple with, because I've had experiences as well as some of my peers where, you know, people didn't want to say the word. And
there's no shame in not wanting to say it. Let's throw that out there.
Right. And some educators would say, well, you know, it's, the response has either been, you see that struggle right there, now imagine how it was. It's just, I'm sorry. It's just something that just, you know, bothered me, because it's like, I feel like it's just like not saying a curse word in front of your parents. Like, you skip the word, because the thing for me is that everyone in the classroom has the material. We see the word, we know what it is. Is it necessary to say it out loud? Again, I do agree with you with the fact that there should be a larger discussion around that, and it should be up to the student's discretion. And just to be mindful, because I feel like some people will take advantage of getting the opportunity to, quote unquote, say a word that you are not allowed to say. But I think that having those discussions beforehand and afterwards promotes a level of maturity and just makes, again, brings back the educational purpose so that people understand what the word is in the context and the different time periods. When you think back on your academic career, do you feel that you were truly supported and felt safe in schools as a Black student? What should have been done that was not done, or what was done correctly?
So this is such an interesting question because I've gone to many, many different schools. I moved around a lot. I've gone to public, private. I've gone through very selective programs within a public school, and I've gone to a religious school. So I've kind of checked off just about every book that or every box that you can check. I think some situations were better than others. Some situations, absolutely not at all. And it's, I think, a large part of the reason I ended up leaving that institution. And then I ended up being the high school Black Student Union leader my senior year. So I was like, totally, I felt like I had a very welcoming community to go lean back on. I think, you know, one thing that was not done, particularly at the institution that was really bad, is there was so much implicit bias that absolutely no one was checked on and absolutely no one had, I guess, even thought about. And there was, at the time at least, so few steps towards inclusion within the school community. It's really hard to be the only Black girl, and when there's only one other Black kid that you don't really get along with just on a personal level, that's a whole, you're very isolated. And when the school isn't making any steps to diversify for the next semester, get any more teachers, that, like, you notice things like that. I think at some institutions that was where it was done really well, you know, in addition to having a Black Student Union, there were a lot of teachers of color within the building and more students of color. And yes, it was a public school in a very diverse area. That still matters because there's a lot of like districting and redlining things that still keep students of color out of public schools or specific public schools. So that was very encouraging to see. As well as just always having a administrative staff that I knew would listen to me about these issues. In fourth grade, it was at a different school than I'd gone to any of my other schools. And you know, I always knew that my teacher and my administration had my back because I had an issue, not racially motivated, but I did have an issue with bullying at one point. I went to them and they shut it down. I knew another student who was having some problems because he was being called gay. I told the administrator and she's like, no, none of that homophobic crap. So I would have felt, had something happened to me because I was Black, it would have elicited the same kind of automatic response.
Wow, that is... I'm glad to know and hear that administration was very supportive and not tolerating any of those things, just because I think that's where sometimes the mishaps happen, where admin is not on the same page as, you know, teachers. And then that's where the friction happens. So I'm glad that that was a more of a cohesive environment. I think that's something that we need to look for in the future. And just to, you know, wrap things up, why is it important for children to be taught by teachers who look different from them?
I think there's a lot of ways to answer this question. In terms of, let me start with why teachers who look different from you can matter.
Yes.
Because everyone you meet is going to be different. Even if, you know, it's two Black people, they're going to have completely different lifestyles, completely different family histories, completely different this, completely different that. And so you just need to learn growing up what it's like to be around people who are different from you and accept all those different types of people. And then there's something so rich about being taught by someone who you don't know. My third grade teacher was Chinese, and she had Chinese New Year every year. So kindergarten, first grade, and second grade, I was like, I can't wait to go to Mrs. Chen's class because we get to do Chinese New Year. And I'll never forget that because it was so fun. She brought in all the money envelopes. We did the dragon lanterns. And that's just something I very much treasure, like getting to learn something about a different culture. And I can't even imagine what that must have felt like for the Chinese kids in my class to have that just be something we learned about and celebrated for a full 10 days in school. In terms of teachers who look different than you, kind of what I was literally just saying, it's always someone to have your back. It's someone to have shared experiences with. It's someone where if you're struggling, they're going to understand it on just a little bit deeper level, even if it's an issue that they're totally non-conformed with. At least I would hope that for most teachers, you know, they would want this sense of unity and trusting with their students. And so I would want to be able to say, I get you in a way no one else can get you just because I happen to look like you. And if there's one place you can feel safe, hopefully it's my room. So,
yeah. I love that because one of my favorite things about being in college is being able to be a part of my friends' cultures and the celebrations that they have, because you get to see what makes the people around you, you, and you just get immersed into such beautiful cultures and ways of life that is just so, so rich. And I just want to say thank you again, Lauren, for doing this. And to everyone listening, where can they find you?
Yeah, so mostly just on LinkedIn. I know we're dropping that link in the description. I also have Instagram. It's just Lauren Hicks with 2 underscores on either side.
Amazing. Thank you. If you're hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope that you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.